Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Lowdown. Today I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Manon Allaire. Manon, a big warm welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for the invitation. Really happy to be here.
I'm glad that we could finally do it. Look, as we begin with every guest who comes on the show, first, Manon, could you please take us through your earliest football memory?
Oh, football memory. Okay. I think before working professionally in football, I've always played football in my garden on the beach. I used to live in French Polynesia, so that was pretty like a big thing to just like play after school on the beach. I think deep down I've always wanted to kind of work in that environment. But first, to be honest, I engaged more like in like a path of being a physical education teacher. And then I fell in love with research, especially because I could get closer to what I like, which was teams, sports teams, and especially football. So
Amazing. And obviously you come on the show, to speak about your chosen area of expertise, be it in group dynamics. I mean, currently working as a group dynamics analyst. For those listening that may be a bit unfamiliar with that role, how would you define that?
I guess, like, to be fair, that's a role that I kind of like invented. I'm definitely not the only person, like the only one working around group dynamics. I just wanted to be very clear about my approach and my focus, and that's why I decided to call myself a group dynamics analyst, because I thought it would make sense for staff members also. I'm also just like a PhD in sports psychology, but my expertise is really specific to cultural diversity actually and group dynamics. And then because sports psychology is so, it can be a bit of a blurry area. It's still developing, but in sports psychology, it basically goes from individual work to collective work. Kind of, like when you work like one-on-one meeting, but it can also just be like a group level intervention and stuff like that. And it also goes from mental health to performance, kind of like if you look at it like the whole picture. My expertise is really specific to the group aspects and to the performance side. So I'm not a clinical psychologist, and I think it's important that all the staff I work with, they know that. Just like I think it's important that the mental coach, for example, who work around individual mental abilities, for example, they know that they're not clinical psychologists. So it's very different that working around depression or all types of topics that matters to mental health. So like I said, my work is really specific to group dynamics, and I guess the specific side of my approach is also based on my research background. And what I develop is a data-driven methodology to work around group dynamics in a more informed and clear and impactful manner. I think there is so much cliche still around team buildings, cohesion. It is very important, but we sometimes just want to put the focus on it and say we want a cohesive team. But other than that, it just stays at a surface level, kind of, just like activities here and then, or just in precision, for example. So for me, it was kind of like powerful to say that I am a group dynamics analyst, and I'm going to work around the aspects of your performance throughout the season. And with the data, like I'm going to bring data, just like you bring data to inform a lot of other decisions on your performance, physical aspects. I don't know, you monitor fatigue, menstruation in women's football, for example, so many things. But even if team functioning or group management is so central, it was still something dealt with intuition most of the time, and kind of like, yeah, like I said, here and then, let's do an activity. So I wanted to have to offer this type of approach to provide the managers, the team members with like the proper information and the clarity to be more impactful in their management, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, there's a lot there to unpack, and it just goes to show how wide-ranging your role is. What I'm intrigued to unpack a little bit more, Manon, is obviously you prefaced it at the start by saying you did a 4-year PhD, and I'd love to go a bit more into detail because it was really, really intriguing to see the topic of expertise you chose, and following sports teams, and obviously the more and more money that's gone into sports, how kind of that's what that looks like in a dressing room, what it looks like on the field in terms of having to manage these huge multicultural squads. What were some of your key findings from that research?
Honestly, they're not even that mind-blowing. It's just that I feel like it's very simple, but it is powerful. That probably the main thing is that there is diversity everywhere. Even if in a team, for example, where maybe you would not even have one single expatriate players, at the end of the day, your group is going to be diverse in another way. And so you're always going to have fault lines that are going to create some subgroups within your teams. And subgroups are not a bad thing, but diversity itself doesn't mean anything. Your group is always diverse, but in terms of specific variables. So maybe it's diverse in terms of personalities, nationalities, language, ethnicities. There is so much ways it could be diverse. And then so the main thing, the first, I think, result is to say that diversity is everywhere. The coaches, the managers, they know about it. It's more like they approach it as a topic that's interesting or that's coming up quite often. But other than that, nothing is really done about it. I think it's also very cultural. It kind of depends. Like, for example, I was very focused on the French context. And I think the way we approach diversity in France is also a lot around everyone is equal and we want to treat everyone the same. And that's a bit tricky because at one point then you just like decide to not see any differences in people and then you're not careful about it. And then I guess just like one main result as well, I mean few other results, but I think one main one is that doesn't matter the objective level of diversity, whatever if you have five expatriate players, 10, whatever, it's really about how diversity is perceived in your group, which is great because you have way more control on that. For example, on my end, at my level with my position, I never have a word to say with the recruitment, for example. I mean, they could come and ask what you think, but I really don't want, and I never wanted to go that way, you know, where I'll say maybe not this nationality with this nationality or whatever. It's more like you create your group as a manager, as a sport director, or whatever. Just be careful of some aspect. Obviously, if you recruit six players from the same nationality, obviously you're going to have probably a national subgroup, which is not a problem in itself, but it's how you're going to work around that so that you have a cohesive team and you help them integrate. But for me, it's about, yeah, okay, you have all those cards in your hand at the beginning of the season, all those players, all the diversity. What do you do about it? Like, how do you actively work on your group dynamics to make it a functioning group? And then that's also, I think that's interesting, the fact that my PhD was so focused on cultural diversity and I loved it. I really do like this topic was so interesting. I could spend my whole life working on that aspects, but at the end of the day, diversity is part of your team composition. And then my work to be very, you know, action oriented, I work around group dynamics. So whatever, it's kind of like whatever if it's diverse, not diverse, or whatever type of team composition you have, then that's what I brought the data. Every single group is different with specific needs, specific issues or whatever. And sometimes it's not even the issues that we thought it would be. For example, when I first arrived and worked for Olympique Lyonnais after my PhD, my main focus was at the very beginning, it was the cultural diversity. I was in charge of helping integrate the expatriate players. I was in charge of helping with interculturality, etc. But after probably just like 3 months of, you know, collecting the data, observing the group, trying and support a functioning team, it didn't make sense to have that focus all the time on diversity or on expatriate players. So the focus kind of shifted towards just like overall, how do we make this environment and this team, like efficient? How do we prepare to integrate the expatriate players? But it's also how do you prepare to integrate your young players, for example, which is probably an issue as important or as common, I guess, in professional sports. So yeah, sorry, I got carried away. I'm
No,
sharing
not at all.
different things, but yeah, that's part of the, I guess, the main results. And I think a last one that's interesting on cultural diversity specifically is that Like I said, it's all about perception. So we can work around that. We can work with the staff, etc. But also, an interesting thing that we found in one of the study, and it confirms stuff that we saw in the literature, but the literature is very poor at the moment in sports. So generally, it has been there is extensive literature, but more in the organization context. But what we found is that. Like if you look at, for example, national variety, so that's a type of diversity, your minimum level of variety or minimum level of diversity is easy. Everyone is the same. Like if I'm simplifying it, okay? If everyone is the same, it's easy to manage. Maybe nothing really fun or crazy is gonna happen in your group, but very easy to manage. If you have a very, very diverse team, everyone is different. They come from so many different places. It's actually easier to manage than if it's in between. Like the medium diversity is the most tricky one, if that makes sense. Because if you have every single types of backgrounds and personalities and culture, at the end of the day, people have to go and discover and talk to each other. It's gonna be hard to manage because obviously, as a coach, for example, maybe one thing that you're going to do with some players is not going to have the same impact on other players. But it's easier still than having like a medium type of national variety where there is more risk for subgroup formations, and then like clear fault lines. So I thought that one was interesting.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of really good stuff there. And you know what I'm beginning to think of right now is, you know, the use of it, and in terms of using it between a transformational approach and a transactional approach. So for me, that is absolutely crucial in terms of what are we optimizing for here? Is it going to be for performance or is it going to be for well-being? And for me, it's not either or, it's more of an integrated approach. Both.
Well, on that aspect, and I think it's also just part of my approach and my philosophy. Obviously, there are managers or coaches that I really like to work with that are more aligned with how I work or how I see things, you know, a bit more flexibility, like you say, kind of like something a bit more fluid, do you say? Like depending on your context, your needs, your players. But at the end of the day, I never really interfere with the type of leadership, for example. I could even work with, like, obviously not going to work with a toxic type of leadership leader, but I can work with different, very different types of leaders and managers. And that's what I like also in my work, is to try and provide them with the right informations, try to start from their representations and not changing their way of being a coach. I've been working with coaches that are very, very clear and rigorous on their framework, and they want everyone to follow that, and they're not very flexible. I've been working with some leaders that are completely okay with changing every single rule along the way or single way of working. So I don't really, I agree with you with the fluidity and the flexibility of like having like a more of a systemic kind of type of group management, for example. But for me, that's the whole point, is that this approach with the data on group dynamics, maybe you're gonna use those data in a way, and then someone else is gonna use them in another way. And that's what makes sense to me. Obviously, I have some red flags if really in my data, I don't know, I feel like it's a bit problematic or dangerous for some players, then I will highlight that. But sometimes, like for example, when I collect data, then they have access to full reports with like so many results and then a lot of practical recommendations. My goal is not for them to use every single and apply and try out every single practical recommendations. Some coach will try a lot of things because that's how they work. They're not afraid to fail, so they'll be like, okay, let's try this. Doesn't work, I'm gonna try something else. Some coaches can be a bit more cautious and careful, and then they will just try just one, and if that works, they will continue that way. So I don't know if I'm answering your question really, but there is yeah, for me, I just adapt to the style, like the management style, the leadership. I have my opinion, but I think it's not for me really to project that on them, I guess, if that makes sense. But ideally, in an ideal world, yeah, the ideal implication of my work is to have something very systemic and transversal where the data and the group dynamics approach not only serve the managers, but also even the physical trainer during warm-up or every single person in the staff, because they are impacting the environment. So I'll try and infuse that to everyone.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating, just your breakdown of it. And again, speaking about the type of leaders that you work with in your own context, be interesting to dig a bit more into your own kind of lens and your perception, especially when you go into those environments. Manon, what are the main indicators that you use to assess team dynamics in the first instance?
So I could go, sorry, many different ways, different roads. The way I work is that I come and try and observe, discuss the specific needs of the team right now, like in pre-season, mid-season, or whatever time we decided. And then I'm interested in team members' perceptions. That's all that matters for me. That's all what matters. Obviously, in the like first phase, when I try and collect that, like observe to then create a specific tool for them, I will observe, and so I will apply my own lens. That makes sense. My own vision of the world. This is interesting. Sometimes I will share some of those observations, but it's really not at the end what's impactful. Because for me, and not for me, it's not like I didn't invent that, obviously. But when I say it's all about perceptions, is that I'm interested in the bias of every single team member's perceptions. If you're upset or not satisfied at the moment because you're not playing, this is going to impact so much the way you're interacting with your staff, teammates, or whatever. And it's okay because that's your state of mind at that point. So the way I work is that, so like I said, I take a time to discuss the needs, identify a bit like the context and everything. Then I will create a specific tool to measure through questionnaires, to measure the team dynamics. And then when I say team dynamics, it can go like it could be 8 hours questionnaires, you know, because it's so wide. Because we always think about cohesion, but cohesion is like one little piece of group dynamics. So usually what I like to do is having still like for probably almost every team having a overall diagnosis of teamwork, because I think that's interesting in the way that it's very wide, and then it allows us to then identify the needs right away, like where do we need to focus, what can we reinforce that's working well already, but also where are our weaknesses. So teamwork is basically everything a team does to perform. So that's communication, coordination, cooperation, conflict resolution, solving problems on the pitch, and many others. So I would always look at that kind of. But then other than that, depending on your needs, if you want to focus on leadership because you feel like you can't seem to have that on the pitch or outside the pitch or whatever, then I will dive into this. If you have a specific communication issue, then maybe I will go further than just the teamwork questionnaire, and I will look into your communication structure to look at the communication flow or stuff like that. So it can go very different ways, but generally I like to work to look at teamwork perceptions. I like to look at team structure, especially in terms of leadership, because I think that's probably one of the most actionable results then, because I know I can kind of like map the relationship within the group. See, and then it's interesting because you mentioned, for example, you mentioned the type of leadership, like transformational, transactional. This is like, you know, internal, that's you and your resources. I'm not that much interested in that. I'm not interested in identifying who has the best resources. I'm more interested to see who has an influence on the team right now. And sometimes it's not the person you would have wanted as a coach, for example. there is so many different types of influence, and I'm measuring that to see. I don't know. There's so much to say, but like it allows me to identify the those leaders like in different areas. Maybe the leader more in terms of energy and emotions and motivation. Maybe a leader more in terms of like the task to accomplish and the goals on the pitch. Maybe a leader more like outside the pitch. So I usually look at that because then based on that we can try and anticipate and control kind of the type of influence those players have. Because if, like we said, it's a player that you would have not really wanted to have that influence, like what can you do about it? It's either you say, I don't know, I don't like to work with him, don't like his values or whatever, and then you push him away from that, but he still has that influence. So maybe at one point, if you don't control and try and work around that to drive it to the right direction, maybe it's gonna become, you know, what we generally call like some type of negative leadership. Sometimes we also identify some great potential in some players. For example, I've been working with like big women's football teams. So usually in those teams you have very good and big leaders. Good is an opinion, but at least it's like very big and strong leaders that everyone identify as leaders, and they've been leaders for years, etc. It's also interesting to see beyond those players. To see what players has some potential at the moment is not perceived as the main leader, but has some great potential because then as a manager, they can try and reinforce that, give them the credibility they need, the trust they need. Sometimes just using the data and showing them how important they are as a leader, for example, and also try and deconstruct the like the definition we have about what is a leader, because sometimes players they have like a strong influence on just I don't know bringing some serenity. They don't speak loud, they don't yell, so maybe that's not the person that's going to help you being super resilient after I don't know being led by two goals, but maybe that's also someone that's going to bring something else, and then sometimes they don't even realize it, I guess especially in women's football. So yeah, coming back to your questions, I look at perceptions of team dynamics because that's what matter. I want to know and try and anticipate what player has like some negative perceptions maybe of the group because it's a big indicator of how they feel in that group. And so there is a lot to do to try and prevent dropouts, try and prevent, you know, those bad kind of energy that they can bring to the group. And I look at teamwork, I can look at leadership, I can look at communication. And then just to finish, but like I said, I could look at any variables, but to finish, I think one simple but very powerful variable, even probably more powerful than cohesion, for example, is the perceptions of clarity. Clarity of your own role and the clarity of your teammates' role and clarity of goals. And it sounds so simple, but I've been doing that for several years now, and it's probably my main indicator of dropouts or, you know, being disconnected from a staff, not buying into it anymore, is when the players, they don't see the clarity. Obviously, it's really correlated to your results, obviously. It's really correlated to if you're playing or not. And obviously, those players who don't play, they will need that clarity to keep going. But it's a very strong one. I've had that scenario in some team. It happens before that I would have highlighted that maybe one player was very, like in terms of clarity, like the clarity was dropping along the season on their own role and on the goals as well. Even if the goals can seem like so simple, but if like for everyone it's simple, but for that specific player it was dropping. So I remember I highlighted that that player was yeah like they were losing the connection with that player, and in that specific scenario things were dropped but not specifically around that players, and it, at the end of the season there was a like a conflict finally occur after obviously like related to performance, but what I want to say is that even with you know without those data, or maybe this could have been prevented, or maybe it would have not happened or whatever. But I think those data can help really anticipate those type of things. Obviously, even if the coach would have go and talk to that player, maybe it would have happened still. But the whole point of the data is, like I said, like many things, it helps you reinforce what's working well, can help you anticipate those type of events, and also just like set a direction, yeah, for the rest of the season.
Again, an awful lot to unpack, Manon, but what I'm particularly intrigued is to delve a bit more in is into the leadership piece, because traditionally, we'd look at leadership as this one bucket, whereas I know Francis' shared leadership model is huge within your work and significant, in not optimizing for, let's say, characters and personalities, but extrapolating out across skill sets. For those listening, would you mind to delve a bit more into that, please?
So yeah, like you said, I really rely on the work of Katrien Fronsen with her shared leadership model. The whole point is to say that right now, and especially probably in professional sports or like elite sports, it's not feasible anymore to just rely on one person, like one big captain or one strong leader, to deal with all the demands and needs that's going to occur in a season, whether it's with media, whether it's with integrating your young players, whether it's with keeping a good atmosphere, or whether it's, you know, more like on the pitch and stuff. So the whole point is to look at leadership in a more global way and try and identify the resources within your group. I mean, the resources have always been there, but if you don't work around it, maybe it's just gonna stay like that, like always, with like one captain, and then nobody's gonna really feel concerned involved with that. So shared leadership is about making the best use of your resources right now. That's something I hear a lot with coaches, especially more like probably more in also younger teams, but not only. It's like a very common issue to feel like you don't have the proper leaders. You know, you lose one game or like something happened and you're like, ah, nobody's really stepping up. Do I really have leaders at the end of the day? It happens all the time. And the fact is, you have all, like, obviously, depending on the teams, maybe you have more or less resources, but you have resources in your group for sure. But then you need that little push to identify those resources and to try and develop them. So in Katrien Fronsen model, she looked at four types of leadership. Task leadership is really on-pitch leadership, is about obviously the task to be completed. So that's really football related. It can be just like a good player that leads by example of being a good player, but it's also someone that reminds you the goals. Sometimes that's like gonna bring some communication and tactics, advise people, etc. So that's task leadership. Then as well on pitch, you have the motivational leadership. So obviously it's about motivation, but not only, it's more about the energy they're bringing. So that's the one that can, you know, give you the chill or the determination, just like that, just with a word or just with an action they do. It can also be a leader that helps you with being resilient, dealing with the emotions of the group, basically. And then outside the pitch, you have the social leadership. Obviously, like this is one model, but there are so many models of leadership. And at the end of the day, whatever kind of, you know, like people would call it a locker room leadership, that works too. So here in her model, she talks about social leadership. Social leadership is about, yeah, it's the one that brings the good vibes, for example, but it can also just be the one that is a good listener and take care of his teammates. And then the final leadership that she looks at is the external leadership, and it's more about media relationship with the clubs, etc. I don't really look at that one. Initially, I was looking specifically at task leadership and social leadership, so really on pitch and outside pitch, because I thought it was giving me great information already. And I think that's a good illustration of how impactful is shared leadership. One day, like in a season, We had identified those leaders. We had created leadership groups to work around that. And it's more than helping them developing that leadership, is really more about, okay, making them aware of that leadership and how they can organize as leaders. Because being a leader yourself is cool, but you're part of a team and it's a team sport in the end. So how do you coordinate your resources to have the best impact on the team, on the performance? So for example, maybe you're very good at giving the right information in terms of tactics, being a good relay from the coach, you know. But maybe you're not, you don't really like to yell, you don't really like to bring people together, and you're not comfortable with that. So how can you coordinate with your crazy teammates who's gonna be like, let's go, bring everyone together, and how do you then put your input? But yeah, so anyway, in one season we had the problem of having that leadership group, but mid-season, I think almost all of them were injured. And so if all of them are injured, then you don't have no leaders on the pitch, outside the pitch. You know how is it like when they're injured, and that's another topic, and there is a lot to improve on that aspect as well, because being injured brings you really far away from the group most of the time, because you have a different rhythm of life, of training, etc. But so at that point, we were a bit stuck. Even in the games, it was like all a bit, sorry, I don't have the word in English, but it was all a bit complicated. Why it should have not been complicated, because it was against teams that on paper, it should have been easy. So that's for the first time where I looked at motivational leadership, because I was thinking we need another lever for action. Obviously, again, I talk about data all the time right now, but obviously, even without me or even without the data, probably the coach like is the main expert of his team, so they know basically what players can bring what. But I guess the fact that we rely on that model, that we brought the data, it just brings more power and credibility. And so looking at motivational leadership at that specific moment of the season helped us so much, because we identified other leaders that we didn't even suspect that they had that resource and influence on the team. And so we were able to kind of like, solicitate them in a different ways, develop their leadership, and kind of overcome the what was happening in terms of, the season. So yeah, so that's the model of Catherine Fontaine. I don't know if you want me to say more. I know she has a whole program for developing that leadership. I work kind of the same, like with my own methodology, but it's kind of the same idea of having those leadership groups. Trying and develop that and coordinate players, and it's really straightforward. That's what I like about working on group dynamics, and we can come back to that later, but I don't work on individual resources. I feel it's super important and it's very great when clubs have that resource, but what I like about working on group dynamics is that it's the most straightforward. At the end of the day, it's a team sport. So if you want to impact right away, because you need to be performing right away, like quickly, I think it's a good starting point to try and impact the environment first. And then obviously, individually, if players can get stronger and stronger, then that's good. But it doesn't, like, imagine you have, I don't know, seven players, and that would be good, that works really hard on their individual mental skills. I don't know, maybe they're very good now with focusing, dealing with emotions. It doesn't mean that if you have those seven players already mentally, it doesn't mean that your team is going to play good at the end of the day. So that's why I like to focus and start from the group. And so those leadership groups or leadership meetings, usually they're very straightforward. It's about recognizing everyone's qualities, strengths, and then when we walk out of that door, we want to try and implement strategies that we decide. Okay, we have a problem with, for example, conceding a goal. Every time we concede a goal, then we're out, we're dead, nothing happens anymore. What can we do as leaders? How can we empower as well our teammates to try and overcome that? And then that sometimes that's very simple strategies, but at least they come to the pitch, or they come to training, or they come to the game with like very simple things that like to try and to implement. And I guess to finish, it's really not about leaders and followers. So the whole point of those leadership of this shared leadership is that every single team members could express leadership. Obviously, maybe some of them don't have as much influence and power, or they don't feel comfortable doing that, or they don't want to do it, and it's okay. You don't want 30 leaders in a team. But at the end of the day, the whole point of this shared leadership and those identify leaders is to try and infuse that and empower people around so that everyone can use and bring what they can bring.
Absolutely fascinating breakdown as to how you apply that model within your own framework. And speaking with others before coming on the show, obviously there's quite a few people in the field trying to do similar work to yourself, but where your work really stands out from afar, Manon, is your applied use of data. And again, walking that threshold between being data-led and data-informed is it's a tricky one at times. But how would you summarize your own use of data and how important is it to your own work?
That's an interesting question because I think also because English is not my native language, I've kind of like naturally said it was data driven. Maybe it's more data informed than data driven, because also it's a type of data where, for example, what I lack the most, especially now that I'm a consultant and I'm not full-time part of the staff, is that I come to the team, I don't know the team that much. Obviously, I get to know them because I want to know their context, I want to know their needs. But even like sometimes in between the needs that a coach how to say formulates or the needs that he thinks he has and the proper needs, like the actual needs of the teams right now, sometimes I see a little gap and I like that. So I like to come as a consultant. I don't know really the teams. I do my data collection. Obviously, I need the trust of the players so that it works well, but even with the bias, like I said, like the desirability bias of like filling a questionnaire, I love them because it's so interesting, those bias. And then I would be able to, provide, like I said, like a full report, but it's like raw interpretation of what I think your team is right now, how it's functioning. So I love that. And then a very important step for me, that I will never remove. And that's why it's not only about the data and the report. I always I come physically, like to the team, I come on site, sorry, for data collection and also for feedbacks. I love the part where I have a meeting to kind of unpack all of this, all the results. I have a meeting with usually the manager, like the coach, the head coach, maybe a sports psych if there is, maybe their head of departments, depends on. Every coach can just choose how they want to work. But that meeting where we unpack all my raw interpretation of how your team is functioning is so interesting because obviously it's going to confirm a lot of things that you know already because it's your team, so you know it better than me. But sometimes there are also results that stand out that are a bit surprising or going a bit further than they thought. And in terms of interpretation, I provide some interpretation or at least at least I have my I provide them with the raw reading of results, some interpretations, and then some practical recommendations. But they are the most sorry about my English. They are the most like the expert of their team, so their interpretation is very interesting to me. And so that step where we unpack all the results is all about discussing, going back and forth. That's what I see. How would you explain that yourself? How do you see things? And then based on that, that's also a way to help them decide on some practical recommendations. Because if we didn't have that step, it would just be me and my raw reading analyze my raw analysis of the group dynamics, which is okay, great, like it's great. But then probably part of my practical recommendations, some are not at all fitting with the context, not at all fitting exactly with the team culture or whatever. So I think obviously I believe in the data. But for me, it's more like that they inform the group managements afterwards. But at the end, it's up to the managers to manage the groups how they want. So it's more, it's like a bonus, kind of like giving them the clarity. Obviously, sometimes, yeah, sometimes it can be more central than others, but for me, it's just like informing their group managers. It's not gonna revolution everything, if that makes sense. I don't know if I'm answering your questions on my use of data. Just one thing, I think during my PhD, for example, I used also a lot of qualitative methodologies. I love them because I felt it was like way more complex, you know, to dive into like team and all its complexity and the players and interaction, observing, interviewing. Right now, I made the choice of only using questionnaires. Like I said, sometimes I observe, but for me, it's like with my own lens, and I like it to have that in mind. But I don't really use it to for like to give the practical recommendations. So interestingly, for me, like personally, now I work a lot with all the questionnaires with the more quantitative data, but because it's based on perceptions, it makes sense to me. And then I think the data itself is useless, if I'm honest. It's really about how they're gonna use it and make sense of it. So like I said, the step where we unpack all of it and we have a good proper discussion on it is already like super impactful and powerful, because we get to sit down and go beyond just the typical, okay, the group is living well, you know, is a good atmosphere, we're good. Oh, they are doing this huddle at the beginning of the game, so I think we're good. So like the idea is to go beyond that. So for that, the data is amazing. But I've had some experience in the past where I come, I do my whole approach data, like with like so many, I think, interesting insights or very specific insights on the group dynamics. But if nothing is done afterwards, it's useless, like really useless. But like all the data in sports, I guess. So yeah, that's my vision.
Well, it's absolutely fascinating, and you know what's really intriguing about your work, Manon, as you said, you're not beset by the day-to-day in terms of working with a professional sports organization. You have the benefits of being on the outside working as a consultant. Well, a huge part of your work is obviously that future forecasting piece to see where this role and how this work will shape itself in the future. So what I'm really curious to know is what social, cultural, economic trends are you noticing right now at the moment, which you believe will impact your work a lot over these next 10 years?
Ooh, that's a big question. So if I start like right now at the moment, like within the past, so I've spent 3 seasons at Olympique Lyonnais, then it's my, like I've had 1 season as a consultant. I feel like already my methodology has improved so much, also because now I get to work in different contexts, facing different challenges and stuff. I see the group dynamics piece is also like it's a big trend also at the moment. So it's growing a lot, which is cool because it's gonna be like people are gonna challenge themselves to get better and better. Ideally, right now, I love to work with staff where I have a very good relationship with the head coach, because he's or she's the one impacting the team like the most strongly. I like to work with staff where we're able to have the most systemic approach possible, where my data not only benefit the head coach, but also, like I said, maybe the physical trainer. I don't know. If you want to work on team resilience or team communication, for example, how can you maybe warm that up from the warm up, like before getting to the session? And also, ideally, it's very interesting for me to work with staff where they have a sports psych. Because the sports side can be an amazing relay from my work, because maybe they're gonna organize the workshop, or maybe they're gonna be the little voice for the head coach to be like, okay, like remember we decided to focus on that aspect on group dynamics for this week or for next week. Also, I'm just reflecting as I'm talking to you. So maybe one day I would want to come back to staff, but it's more that my job right now, being so specific to group dynamics, it really makes sense. I think it's really more relevant and consistent to be outside of a staff because and sometimes I miss being part of a staff like full time, you know, like having that those emotions, having the same exhaustion as everyone else also. But I think that's also why I left being part of the staff is that because I work around group dynamics, at the end of the day, I was kind of too much identify as the responsible for cohesion, responsible for group dynamics, whereas that's the opposite of what I'm trying to transmit and sell, is that ideally we want every single team member to feel involved and committed to make this group a better group to live in better performing environment and stuff. So it's always, and I want to remember that, and I think that's also my view on being a sports psych or being a mental coach. I would want us, and that's my opinion, doesn't mean that I think it's the only right one, but I think we should remember that we're never going to have as much impact as the head coach, for example, at the end of the day. No workshop is going to have as like as Sorry, no workshop is going to be as impactful as a coach word to a player or coach word to the team. So that's what I like to do is try and impact indirectly through the staff, through the managers, through the environment at the end of the day. I don't know if this specific job is going to grow really in the next 10 years or if it's going to be more hybrid kind of. Because, like I said, like you can have like very good sports psych who both work on individual interviews, for example, one-on-one interview, but also will organize some team workshop and work around the group dynamics. I think it's a very interesting position to be, like we said, outside and provide all those tools to people within the staff and to players. I have no idea though if it's gonna like really it's a good question. I have no idea if it's gonna grow. I think there is not one way, like there is no one perfect organization for a staff, one perfect staff, you know, like with the departments. I know sometimes you have the medical within the performance, sometimes it's separate. I think it's very personal to organizations as well. And then also the group dynamics piece. It's growing. It's growing in the literature. It's growing in research. It's growing in sports, but probably at the end of the day as well. Not every single coach is gonna be thinking that group should be first. So and it's okay too. So I think maybe my type of job would grow. Yeah, with those type of coach who really thinks that group management is probably. Even, you know, it's almost the main part of your job sometimes. Group management is maybe even more important than sometimes than the tactics or the football. So yeah, I don't know. Sorry, I can't really answer that question. In terms of economy, obviously, with more resource like financial resources, you can have more access to those type of like very specific job. But also, that's the tricky part of having more economic resources than you have bigger staff. But bigger staff is so complex in terms of group dynamics as well. So I've experienced that, for example, also in a previous club where we first, when I arrived, we were like probably 10 or 15 in the staff. At the end, when I left, we were 30. Then my job, I think, and even now, I think my job could sometimes gain to be like to be in priority focusing to the staff. Because like staff dynamics is really overlooked, whereas it's like it's the environment that's gonna shape everything else. So if you have more people like me, then that's another position to staff. So I think more than the skills or the content or the data, it's also about just like the social skills. That matters for my type of position, but that matters. I think you would agree for every single staff members nowadays, especially with like such big staff, it's so important to have those skills. So yeah, sorry, I went a bit everywhere. I don't know how to answer really that question. I don't know how it's gonna look like, but I like that it's gonna. I don't really know what my own job will look like in 3 years, because maybe if we do that interview again in 3 years, I would work very differently, honestly. So.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating, and I think it's the perfect answer. You know, one where you're looking with a bit of trepidation, but also equally a lot of excitement. And on this has been fantastic, anyways, and I hope in the future we do in fact try and do a part two. I've really, really enjoyed today. Hopefully, you have done as much. But as we begin to close the show, for anyone that's slightly bit inspired, you know, to thread your or to follow a similar path yourself. You know, just from listening to you over the last hour or so, what would be the one bit of key advice you'd have for them?
You mean for what? Like to do like the same type of job, or to create your own job? To yeah, like the advice, like I kind of like closed the conversation just before, is that I don't really, I always stay open, and I try and adapt to the needs I identify around me. So I never had really a fixed ideas of where I wanted to be 10 years, like. From now. So like if you asked me 4 years ago when I ended up in Olympique Lyonnais, I was like, that's it, that's the dream job, I love it. And then because I always remain open and I always remain curious, I think I wanted, yeah, I wanted to make it grow, and it just made sense for me to get out and continue to develop my methodology also in a position that's more relevant to me. So advice would be to, yeah, remain open, curious. Proactivity also has been a strong part of my path. Just try and, yeah, learn from people, talk to people, because that's how I ended up here today, because I talked with a very good colleague of you. That was very interesting. And I don't know, I think it depends, like if it's to do like my specific job, if that's interesting to like if some persons are interested by that, obviously there is many ways of achieving that. I think the data part would be, yeah, through a PhD, but probably not even. There is so many ways to go there. And if it's more about just like trying and create a methodology that makes sense to me, it makes sense, and to obviously some staff it makes sense. I think that's really, yeah, about staying really alert on the needs around and curious and enjoy, I guess. Sorry, I don't know if that's a right answer again, but yeah, I guess that's it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today, Manon.
Thank you, Connor. Thank you very much. I really enjoy your questions, because it's different than some questions I have. You know, like sometimes it's a bit cliche, and we stay superficial on the, I don't know, cohesion, for example. So yeah, really enjoyed it. Thank you for the invitation.